2017 was a watershed year for women and women's rights around the world. From the Global Women's March last January to the Me Too movement, women stood up and demanded their right to be heard. They insisted on the right to thrive in an environment free of violence, discrimination, harassment, and stigmatization. I'm Fatima Mendez, and in this first edition of our UN News interview podcast, we speak with Lakshmi Puri, the Deputy Executive Director of UN Women, the UN entity for gender equality and the empowerment of women. She was part of the original leadership team at the inception of the UN agency in 2011 and is stepping down at the end of January 2018. Ms. Puri talks to us about how UN Women can build on the huge momentum for women's rights that is impacting politics, society, culture, and the workplace today. 2017 was a very eventful year for women and women's rights. What do you consider to be the most impacting events of the year, and which do you consider will have the most lasting effect on the advancement of gender equality?
Well, it was indeed a great awareness, consciousness-raising moment for the gender equality movement and for feminism and for provoking outrage against the violence that has been a global pandemic against women, but which has often been unacknowledged and against which there has been little accountability. So you saw that the year began with a women's march, and there were women's marches around the world in 58 countries. And this was something that really showed the upsurge of women taking control of their own destiny and leading the movement building around gender equality and women's empowerment. It was also the moment for highlighting the extent of sexual harassment and violence against women, even in countries where we thought this was history. And in that context, the Me Too movement, and now the Time Is Now movement, all of that showed that, again, women are speaking up and demanding and getting accountability from the institutions, whether it is Hollywood, whether it's media, and it is having repercussions around the world, resonance around the world. So this has been, in that sense, a major awakening, as well as a call to action and accountability demanding moment for the gender equality movement. And so this is really something UN Women has celebrated, has tapped into, has partnered with in so many different ways, and we will continue to do that. The change will not happen if it is allowed to go at the same place. Studies after studies, even including one in 2017, the Gender Gap Study of the World Economic Forum, for example, highlighted that the rate at which we are progressing, we may take another 100 to 170 years to reach gender parity in the economic field, in the political field. So we really have to push the pace. We have to accelerate pushing through special measures route. It has to be quotas, it has to be special investment, it has to be some special consideration, incentives, disincentives, whatever it takes to accelerate.
In 2017, Iceland passed a law basically requiring companies to prove that they have pay equality. And I know that you had the Stop the Robbery campaign, and also you launched the Equal Pay International Coalition with ILO and the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development. Right. So what should we expect from the coalition in 2018?
So we are very pleased about the first ever law that has been passed on making the state hold all actors responsible for enforcing equal pay in the workplace, in the different workplaces, public and private. So this is something, and you know, public sector was seen as something beyond reach, or we can't regulate. But Iceland has shown the way, and it is a fantastic partner in the EPIC initiative, apart from the larger gender equality movement. So we have now launched the EPIC initiative and coalition. But from here, we move this year and the years ahead to really go on the ground in countries and get more and more countries working on how to address the entire ecosystem around the equal pay issue. And that means, how do you address minimum wages? How do you address unpaid care work, care services? How do you address the glass ceilings? How do you address this whole issue, the chain of recruitment, retention, re-entry, and promotion, which also results in, you know, the wage gap between men and women? So there are so many aspects of this equal pay, which are essentially also about addressing women's economic empowerment in the changing world of work, which the CSW set out a whole action plan on. So we are going to very much connect with that, and ILO, which is going to take this forward with individual countries. It's also about engendering the labor movement, as you know, and also women taking a leadership in the labor movement.
In 2017, UN Women launched the African Women Leaders Network, along with the African Union Commission and the Permanent Mission of Germany. What is in store in 2018 for the African Women Leaders Network?
This network is going to work in women's economic empowerment, in women peace and security initiatives. It's going to be a regional force, but also cross-regional force for solidarity building and for highlighting the voice, participation, and leadership of women in global affairs as well as regional and national affairs.
Is UN Women working on other initiatives that address women leadership?
I think we need to have women leaders networks in different contexts, in different sectors, because the whole gender equality agenda is so multi-sectoral. So that's one. And then the other is, we need to also have inter-regional, because there are regional specificities in terms of challenges. There are regional specificities in terms of the success stories, and also what worked, what didn't work. So it's really important that we set up these kind of networks everywhere, and then have a global network at which everything comes together, all these networks come together. So I think, I'm sure we are going to be working in that direction in the years to come, including this year. You know, it's one thing to create a network and then not use it. But we are very deliberately working on engaging these network members in different aspects of the UN's peace initiatives, initiative in the Sahel region, which is a combination of peace, humanitarian, development. So, you know, it's actual use of this network, and it's very rich women's leadership base. Other idea is that we have been supporting strongly Women Speakers Network, Women Parliamentarians Network. We have been very much engaged with all of that, and different sectoral networks of women and professional networks of women. CEOs, I think this is certainly an ambition we have had, that women CEOs, you know, of the world unite on pushing the gender equality agenda in the corporate sector.
You had mentioned the Me Too movement and Time's Up, you know, from women in the entertainment industry calling for change for women everywhere.
Yes.
With initiatives like that, what role can UN Women play as a support or as a venue for change?
So we are present in 93 countries around the world, and with our UN partners, we have a universal mandate and role. So it's important that we tap into this, but also give it a more universal resonance. And to translate the concerns that these movements raise into the broader agendas of gender equality and a comprehensive agenda of gender equality. First of all, beyond sexual harassment at the workplace, look at the larger context of violence against women. Get people to focus on the complete picture, on the existing discrimination, violence, and oppression. At the same time, as I said, to provoke outrage, but not stop at provoking outrage, to also then move from there to action and to accountability. So that's what we seek to do.
At the UN's commemoration of the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women in November, UN Women's Executive Director Phumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka discussed different forms of gender-based violence.
The missing adolescent trafficked girl who is a sex slave. The little girl who moves from tent to tent after being married to an older man old enough to be her father or grandfather in an IDP camp. The baby girl who's cut with a razor in an FGM ceremony. The woman beaten by a partner behind closed doors. The woman's human rights defenders silenced and brutally murdered. The teenage in her bedroom reading billing messages on her mobile phone. The working woman who are harassed and humiliated by their bosses and colleagues. The woman tormented because of her sexual orientation. The list goes on.
Some of the ones mentioned are not normally categorized or labeled as violence against women. Many of these are viewed as or excused as cultural or religious differences. How can UN Women and women all around the world redefine these acts so that they are universally acknowledged as violence against women? And as Ms. Mlambo-Ngcuka said, we socialize the coming generations so that they know that this is not acceptable.
Absolutely zero tolerance for any of this, and no excuse, cultural, religious, social, is acceptable. And that's something that we have tried to really put across, without any doubts or without any qualifications. And this comes from Beijing Platform for Action itself, which clearly states that culture or religion or social norms cannot be used as an excuse for any form of violation of women's human rights, and violence against women is the worst form of violation of women's human rights. So I think we have to be very clear, and I think media is a very important game changer. And it has not always played. In fact, it is neither portraying women in the correct light, nor portraying these forms of violence in the way that they should to show that they are unacceptable. Also, the whole issue of gender stereotypes, that it's women's destiny to be the recipient, be on the receiving end of such violence of various forms, as you've seen. And that if violence happens, it's their shame, they are to blame. No, all of this has to change. And that's what these different movements have also brought forward, that it is not the fault, that you cannot be silent. Women have to speak up. They have to stand up for themselves. And when they stand up for themselves, they also stand up for other women and girls in a similar position. So I think that's something that's really important to emphasize, and we have been doing that. All these categories of violence are violence in the bodily sense. They are violence in the emotional, psychological sense. And also, they are discrimination in the worst form. And you know, the three aspects of gender inequality or equality are voice, choice, physical integrity, and security. So these three things are impacted by all of these practices. We have done studies where there are 3,500 harmful practices, traditional practices, in Africa alone. And this is a conservative study. So there are many, many forms. I mean, honor killings, dowry debts, all kinds of other forms of violence, acid attacks. So all of these need to be recognized for what they are, and a zero tolerance policy by governments, by society, and also I think the public needs to recognize that not only they should not tolerate it, but there should be empathy towards the victims and survivors, that there can be no apathy, because apathy is as bad as being complicit in the perpetration of this violence.
This year, you actually, at the end of January, you'll be stepping down as Deputy Executive Director of UN Women, and you have been part of its leadership since its inception in 2011. What would you say are UN Women's biggest accomplishments, and what would you like UN Women to achieve in the next few years?
Well, I have been very privileged, as you said, to be part of UN Women's leadership team since its inception, and I have had the privilege of building this institution ground up in so many ways. But my greatest satisfaction is from the fact that UN Women was able to drive the intergovernmental normative processes and their outcomes, the epic undertakings of the UN during this period, from 2011 to 2017, in a direction that made sure that gender equality and women's empowerment was visibly integrated and prioritized, as well as systematically mainstream throughout these outcomes and agendas that were adopted. And it began with Rio. These are not gender equality fora or outcomes proper, but it centered gender equality in this. They made it a central part of, you know, the Rio Plus 20 outcome. From there it began, and then we had Agenda 2030 with the gender goal, and UN Women was instrumental in making sure that there was a dedicated goal. And we transformed the gender equality agenda from a social-only issue into a sustainable development issue, economic, social, environmental. So that gives me great satisfaction that we have historic gender equality compact in terms of political commitments at the highest levels by heads of state and government, not only gender equality ministers, but highest level commitments, and that we are poised, if we can implement them, to bring about a gender equality revolution. But also, I think we have made sure that the gender equality institutions themselves, like CSW, and processes and outcomes themselves, become more dynamic, meaningful, and also play a role in monitoring and holding accountable member states and all stakeholders. That's another thing, that we brought in the private sector in a major way. We brought in the civil society from other sectors, not gender equality alone, civil society, but also from environment, development, peace and security. These civil society constituencies also to engender their movements. And we built movements. I think that's really a very major accomplishment of UN Women. All these advocacy campaigns have been powerful. I think we have been seen as champions in the way we have used social media to drive movements and to drive mindset change. You know, you referred to the EPIC initiative, but also we were able to mobilize the private sector around the Unstereotype initiative. So there are so many aspects of this gender equality agenda that we were able to impact in these years. The other aspect that we have been very much working on is to drive a gender statistics revolution. So we launched what is called Making Women and Girls Count for Gender Equality initiative, which is to work with governments, and there were 24 Pathfinder governments who have now undertaken this partnership with us to really make sure that as they implement and work towards achieving Agenda 2030 for sustainable development, which has SDG 5, which is on achieving gender equality and empowering all women and girls, that they in fact make sure that gender statistics and gender related data enriches and informs every aspect of that implementation. So this is really, it's about a value chain of data, knowledge, policy, monitoring, and accountability. And I hope that at some point we can have a true global center of excellence embedded in and driven by UN Women, resources permitting. Because I think resources has been a major constraint on the true realization of UN Women's potential. I would also say that we have been very successful in mobilizing the game changers and bringing them into the gender equality movement.
How can the public support UN Women's work?
Public can support UN Women's work by themselves being agents of change. Women and girls must stand up for gender equality, for their rights, claim their rights. And I think this Me Too movement, it should be also Me Too, meaning I am an empowered woman too movement. So that's really important. And that's how they can. And through their actions within the family, within the community, within society, in the country, in whatever positions they hold, whatever professions they are in, they must strongly support gender equality and women's empowerment and be the champions no matter what. Similarly, I would say men and boys must come forward and be partners in change. Otherwise, we will not be able to really get there in the way that we want. And I think we want everyone to be a strong supporter of Planet 50-50 and to reach that goal of Planet 50-50 latest by 2030. Because it has to be within a generation. We cannot wait 100 years and beyond. And we have all got to step it up. But also, since you've asked me concretely, we have to really have individual public giving, the way the public gives to other causes, to UNICEF, to UNHCR. We need to have the public give resources and contribute to the resources, financial resources of UN Women. And that's something that we really need a big boost on. And governments, of course, must raise their contributions to UN Women.
That was Lakshmi Puri, the Deputy Executive Director of UN Women. Thank you for listening to the first edition of our UN News interview podcast. I'm Fatima Mendez. If you want to hear more editions of our podcast, please go to soundcloud.com/UN Radio.